welcome to the Happy Ramp Podcast. I am Ted Kluck, joined as always by Barnabas Piper and Ronald J. Martin. Boys, we're a little tired today, man. I can hear it in all of our voices. So hopefully hearing about our sponsors, Pipe, will just elevate the mood in the room and remind us of the big business enterprise that that the three of us are blessed to be a part of.
Well, nothing is more energizing than commerce. So
absolutely. Buying and selling, man. It's the heartbeat of this program, and it's the heartbeat of our souls. So Pipe, let's do some buying and selling. Tell us about Missionalware.
Yes. So Missionalware is our sponsor. Listeners are going to be quite familiar with them, but they have a new product line they want to highlight. And I'm looking at it right now, and it's very cool. I want these things. And so they said they were going to send me some, and I'm hoping that they will send
me
some.
Dude, that's been the rumor, man. That's been the rumor for a long, long time.
But they are they're moleskin journals, so there you go. Hipsters everywhere rejoice.
Although, dude, I'm looking these things up
and
right
they are,
now.
They're laser etched, and so you get like a black journal, and it has sort of like the – it's just the sort of the gray laser etched look on the front. But they have ones with John Calvin and Charles Spurgeon, and then they have one with the five solas, which is pretty cool design. And then they have one with a Calvin quote: "The human heart is an idol factory," and it's a heart factory with smoke coming out of it. So sort of a cool it sounds worse when I say it. That sounds really, really creepy.
No, just keep going.
It's pipes. Pretty That's cool. No, so they have these. They really want me to highlight these. They are also working on some additional designs, so they're going to have more of these. So along with all of the cool mugs and the pint glasses and the shirts and the sweatshirts and the wall hangings and all those things, they now have these. So if you're a moleskin person, which I am, I use moleskins every day for all sorts of things. These are pretty sweet ones. If you use the code HAPPYRANT at checkout, they're putting together brand new Happy Rant stickers. So with our new logo, most of you listeners will have noticed that we no longer have the guy screaming into a megaphone, because he was a little bit frightening, I think, kind of like the Iowa Hawkeye mascot. So we needed to get rid of that
aggressive
guy. He was a bit aggressive, made kind of put people on their heels.
I think that was our old nature. We've been redeemed.
So now we just there's a megaphone, but it's a bit more of a passive megaphone, so we don't have to scream through it. It's a little bit less aggressive.
Well, we're not saying what you should do with the megaphone one way or the other. That's the thing.
Norton,
yes, do with it what you will.
And should we do anything aggressive, consider this your trigger warning. But you will be able to get one of those stickers with your order. So you use Happy Rant, you'll get one of those stickers with your order. So check out some of these journals, order them. They're similar pricing to what you'd get if you bought the same thing at like Barnes & Noble, except they're way cooler designs. So go ahead and get them here. Use the code Happy Rant, get a sweet sticker, put it on your MacBook Pro, which is what I do, or your car, wherever you want to show off your amazing loyalty to the Happy Rant.
Wow. Boys, when I get a Happy Rant journal, a moleskin journal from these guys, finally, it'll be the first moleskin journal I've ever had, man. I'm excited. Wow.
What do you, you don't strike me as the digital type. No, I'm not, man.
No, I just use whatever's handy to write on. So okay. I usually use like legal pads, to be honest, like the big yellow legal pads. Yeah.
Well, there's a guy named Stephen Pressfield did this whole book on writing, and he's a legal pad guy. He talks all about how you should be able to outline a novel in one page and things like that. But it's all legal pad. I'm a moleskin guy because I don't really know why. I feel more creative when I use a moleskin. So I've completely bought into the lie, and I'm addicted to the drug.
Dude, maybe I will feel more creative too. Big R, are you a moleskin guy?
No, I'm not. I don't
really.
I'm not really a. I'm not really a writer. So,
interesting. Yeah. Interesting.
You just talk your books.
Yeah, I do. I don't do like outlines and things. So I just start writing. So
got you.
And you would probably know that when you read my collective works.
All four.
Not a lot of rhyme or reason going on here, Ronnie. Maybe you should start this thing we like to call outlining and journaling. You know,
all four of you who have read the book that we've done together. So,
you know what, Big T, that's actually really probably true. Yeah.
Well, we've heard from at least four listeners who have bought your book. So there's got to be at least somebody else out there, like a cousin or a sister or something.
Dude, even my cousins are tired of my books, I think. I feel glum. I feel sad.
Well, you're working on one. Aren't you working on one on long snapping right now?
Yeah, it comes out in December.
Yeah. So I mean, nice. that'll revive your career. I mean,
there it is.
That right there.
Huge. It is. We're done. Huge, Rachel the Hell Evans. We don't even need to do this anymore.
Let's get out of here. boys, I'm glum in part because of this first topic, man. A couple of weeks ago, in a fit of honesty, near the end of a program, I raised the fascinating question, are we jerks? And it was awkwardly received. The question hung in the air for a moment.
Was I on it that week? I don't know if I remember that, man. Was I on it?
That might have been during your various travels, Big R.
My hiatus?
Dude, and it might have been just like a Barnabas and Big T led avalanche of sarcasm in your absence. So right. that may have been what
carry motive. On.
But yeah, you guys. So I'll just start, I guess. So I guess the more I think about this, the more I think I don't know that so much we're jerks. I just think that we must be raging egomaniacs, being that we're all involved in like multiple podcasts. So for multiple hours a week, we sit and like bloviate at each other and other people, assuming that people want to continue listening to us, man. It's fascinating. I spent more than a minute thinking about that today. Like how big must our egos be? I don't know. What do you guys think? Are we jerks? Are we egomaniacs? What's going on here?
Well, I'm certain we can be jerks. I had a conversation yesterday with a former college classmate of mine, and we both agreed that I was a complete jackass in college. And I mean,
dude, really? So you're at that point in your friendship where you can be like, "Oh, remember what a douche you were."
Well, no, I said it almost apologetically, and instead of being like, "Oh no," the person was like, "Oh yeah,
he was like,
absolutely,
finally
yeah.
somebody said it."
Yeah, they're like, know? "Oh, I'm so glad you finally recognized it." And if I was that way in college, I mean, maturity happens, but rarely does somebody go from being a complete and total jerk to being a complete and total non-jerk. So I'm certain that I'm a jerk sometimes. I also think that sometimes the same tendencies that make one a jerk are part of the things that make somebody entertaining or give somebody a fresh opinion, because you say things that other people only think, or you say things that other people are afraid to say. If this podcast is interesting, it's got to be because we're willing to do something like that sometimes, right?
I would think so.
I hope so.
Pipe, what kind of – if I can push you on this a little bit, what kind of a jackass were you in college?
Are there different brands?
There are so many different brands of college jackass. I want to know which one you were.
I was the – I don't really care what anybody thinks, and I'm certain I'm always right. Like I grew up – I mean, so – I had this conversation with my 10-year-old recently. She is convinced that she is smarter than one of her teachers at school. She didn't say it in as many words, but she was mad that the teacher told her to do something that she just knew was dumb, except it was how to do an assignment better. And I realized in that moment, I'm raising me. Because at about 10 is when I also became convinced I was smarter than all my teachers. And I carried that into college, and that's when some of that was dusted off me. You know, the sanding down began. But it took a few years after college to realize that there are a lot of people in the world who are way smarter and I don't know everything. But I was that guy. So, like, I didn't think I was exceptionally cool. I was never sort of a jock or anything. I was convinced. I was sort of the disaffected, I think I'm smarter than everybody guy. And I would argue about anything, for the sake of arguing.
That's a total college jackass type, man. I appreciate you sussing that out for us. Big R, what do you make of this question?
I don't know, man. You know, here's the thing. So I think what Pipe said is on point. Like we have to be willing to offend if there's going to be any kind of humor laced in the podcast. You know, if we're not willing to offend, then we're not going to have any humor, and we're going to go down the Reform Pubcast route. You know what I mean? And so,
dude, always picking at that scab, Big
guy. I'm not trying to at all.
Ronnie, you're such a jerk.
Dude,
I'm trying to be honest right now, fellas.
I'm going to be driving my car one night in Las Vegas, and I'm going to get shot by one of those Reform Pubcast guys in the street.
I'm kidding. I don't even know who they are, and I actually love their program. And I actually, you know, one of the women in our congregation is like a Reform Pub, like devotee. And so, like, dude, I'm all for it.
So
I love
Shady,
it.
So she can't stand me.
I want to.
Of course, yeah.
I want to push you on that point. You say you love their program. Have you actually ever listened to their program?
Yeah, I actually have. Yeah.
Okay. Do you listen on a regular basis?
No, I don't listen on a regular basis. I don't listen to anything on a regular. I don't listen to podcasts on a regular basis. So that's not my jam. But what I was going to say though is that I think if we can avoid being cynical, cynicism is jerky. And I think when humor and all of that and sort of even sarcasm, I think when it sort of jumps the shark into cynicism, I think that's when the opportunity for jerkiness comes out. So if we can keep the cynicism at bay and just kind of take sort of an observational kind of approach, then I think we can be funny and there can be sarcasm. And what that shows is that we're not taking ourselves too seriously. Because to me, that's what I can't stand. I don't ever want anyone to think that I take myself that seriously because I don't. I don't think you guys do. Do you?
I sure hope not. Here's the thing. When you have strong opinions or you say something strongly, like I often do, people think you take yourself seriously because you're stating something as if it's a definitive. When in reality, you're just like, that's just a way that I express. And I would love it if somebody pushed back and told me why I was an idiot in 17 ways. Like, that would amuse me greatly. If somebody was like, here's why your opinion is completely wrong.
And, well, I'll just start doing that then on the podcast.
Awesome. And not for the sake of argument, but because to me, that's just good interaction. If I say something and you think I'm an idiot, you tell me why I'm an idiot and we go back and forth. But there's a lot of people who, if you say something definitively like, oh, that's a ridiculous way to think about things, they just kind of shrink up and they're like, oh, he hurt my feelings. And I don't mean to be a jerk in that way. And I certainly don't take my own opinion that seriously. It's just a style, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, sure.
Boys.
Thanks, Ronnie.
That's good. Scintillating good. Radio,
man. Yeah, I know, man. I don't know. Is this our last podcast? I mean, is this the way it's going to go down?
Well, dude, you got your new gig with Trogues, man.
For a few more weeks.
Yeah.
Big T, talking about my new gig with Trogues, denying about your old gig with Bartels. I mean, what do we – I mean,
that
I just don't really understand.
That was a pre-existing gig. You know,
I just don't even
knows.
Know where we're going with this. I mean, I don't even know what the sitch is with all of that.
Okay,
man.
So here's a question, Ronnie.
Are you coming after me because Bridezilla is the last book we're ever going to write together? Is that what's going on? Like, you feel a freedom?
I thought Parkourist was going to be the last book we ever wrote together, man. When Believers Don't Believe, which is actually called Finding God in the Dark. But
can I ask you a question? Does that mean that there's a possibility that you and I are going to write a third book together?
Oh, baby. Yeah. I mean, I feel like publishers are clamoring for pairs of writers who haven't sold very well, you know?
But tell our listeners right now how many offers we turned down in the last, I don't know, just 2 weeks. There's a number just out of the blue.
Dude, it's been unbelievable. I mean, our offices are fielding offers constantly. They don't even always share them with us. So, I mean, this is all part of doing business. But
we have handlers that just turn down the offers they know that we would never do. We would never sign that.
You know what? Our handlers have handlers.
That's what I'm saying.
Baby, I have to admit, I listened to the first 30 seconds of your podcast with Trogues just because I wanted to see what the intro music was.
Well, you've listened to more of it than I have then. I mean,
it's back to Trogues' sort of obsession with the blues guitar. Like, there's a little kind of bluesy guitar riff.
Is there really? Like a slide guitar? Well, I'm out then. I mean, I told him no slide guitar. I mean, that's literally against everything I love and live for and believe in. So, I guess we're done.
We're done,
Trogues. Trogues, if you're listening, we're done.
Dude, just wait 2 weeks until he quits the podcast.
If he's listening. Trogues is, you know what Trogues has done in the last week? He has sent me 4 or 5 suggestions for things we should talk about on this podcast that we've already talked about on this podcast. That's how much he listens to the Happy Rant. We can say anything we want, and he won't.
Dude, are you serious? He has that kind of relationship where he sends you show ideas still?
He's like, oh, you guys should totally riff about this on the Happy Rant. I'm like, we did 4 months ago, like right after you retired. I guess it's hard to listen when you're in a rubber room, but still, it's it. No, so we had one listener who asked. So is what's your podcast called, Ronnie? Is it Deconstructed?
Yeah.
Okay. It's good. Good. You know the name. That's good. He said, "Is Deconstructed just like the Happy Rant Junior? Because it just sounds like the same podcast, except over there." And I didn't have a good answer because I have not listened to it. So
dude, I always imagined in my mind's eye Trogues like listening to every minute of our podcast.
Are you disappointed that he doesn't?
I'm a little disappointed because I figured he would. Just waiting for mentions of himself. You know what I mean?
Well, man, I mean, if he would only listen to today's podcast, it'd be a doozy for him today then, man.
It
I mean,
would be a doozy.
It's like the Trobes. It's like the Trobes special ep with him not on it.
Ego inflation to the max.
Well, he should listen to it then.
Let's deconstruct Trogues right now for like a couple of minutes.
Well, no, that's the gig that you guys do over on the other one. We don't deconstruct things. We make fun of things.
Oh, okay.
I don't know what the difference is, but yeah. Yeah, one sounds more intellectual and the other deconstructing gets us called jerks.
Yeah, deconstructing suggests some kind of like academic exercise. And
we just talk more entertainment. We're focusing on music and movies. That's all we do. That's all it's supposed to be.
So, actually, I do have a somewhat serious topic for us to transition into, though. And this is something that has dominated some national media and has crossed over out of the world of sports and into just the world of culture at large and the greater discussion. And that is a quarterback named Colin Kaepernick. Plays for San Francisco. He's currently their backup, although he had a successful run as a starter a few years ago, played in a Super Bowl. And Kaepernick, a few weeks ago in the preseason, refused to stand for the national anthem. As you can well imagine, this touched off all kinds of controversy and all kinds of response in real life and in social media, such that now college athletes, high school athletes are doing the same thing. And my question to you guys is, what do we make of this? There are people who are pounding the table saying that he needs to stand during the national anthem. There are people that are saying it's great what he's doing. What do you guys make of it?
Well, let me follow up with a question. So the major, you know, criticism of him is that this is disrespectful to all of those who are fighting or have fought and sacrificed for our country. And that seems to be the sticking point, because his protest is against the way that sort of the history of the treatment of black people in America, specifically police violence. I realize that's also an issue that some people will debate in terms of whether or not that's a real thing. But is it actually disrespectful to the military, to the people who are fighting for our country, to not stand for the national anthem?
Dude, can I ask another question in response to your question?
Yes.
And then I'll ask a question to respond to your question to Pipe's question.
And I feel sheepish like not knowing this, to be honest. Like, when did the playing of the national anthem really become like an indelible part of every football game?
Well, I can tell you when the NFL began. It was not until 2009 that NFL players began standing for the national anthem. Prior to that, they would still be in the locker room. And then they would come out after the national anthem. So it was not a thing that was expected of players until 7 years ago. So I don't know when the national anthem became like a thing that happened in sports, but that's when it became a thing that was kind of expected of players in the NFL.
Dude, my sense is that the NFL's response to this will be to like send the kids back into the locker room for the national anthem.
Which is probably a good response, because
it probably is. It's, yeah.
So here's, I mean, to answer my own question, or at least open up an opinion on it.
Yeah.
To me, a flag is not really a thing. It's a symbol of a lot of different things. It's a symbol of a lot of different things that a country stands for, both good and bad. To say that it's disrespectful to people who are in the military to not stand for the national anthem is to take a really narrow view of what the flag stands for. And in fact, there have been a large number of military veterans who have supported Kaepernick, saying we fight for the freedom and the rights of people in this country. So the right to protest being one of those, the right to free speech, you know, sort of constitutional rights. And so they would say he's right to be able to do this, and we fight for those freedoms. We don't fight for the stars and bars. And then there's others who call him all sorts of heinous names because they take the opposite tack. I tend to think that expecting somebody to stand for the national anthem just myopically, like you are required to do this. I mean, that's the beginning of a totalitarian mindset, and that's pretty bogus.
Yeah, I agree, man. I tend to be more of the persuasion that, you know, this is exactly the kind of freedom that that people fought for, and it's why we celebrate America when we do celebrate America. That being said, I also acknowledge that at the end of the day, I don't think it's going to be very effective. I mean, you know, it would, and I guess it's started conversations like these, and it's made us think about how race works in sports and all that. So I think there maybe there is some good that's coming of it. But yeah, my feeling, I guess the question I went to right away was, you know, well, why did we start standing for the national anthem anyway, and where did that start, and what, you know, why is that kind of hand in hand with the football experience?
When you double that down with, like, in baseball, you're not expected to stand and do the same thing for God Bless America in the seventh inning, and that started after 9/11. And that to me is just, like, it drives me nuts. And I realize some patriotic listener, if we have any of those, is gonna hate me for this.
But
it
just
it seems like a strange religious rite to me, not a thing where we're actually honoring America or whatever, but it's just sort of this forced thing, and it does not give people the freedoms that America stands for. There's another interesting tidbit on this, and that is, did you know that the Star Spangled Banner has a verse that we never sing that actually revels in the capture and killing of slaves?
I had no idea.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
So I read an article, and it laid out all the verses, because the song was written about a battle between the United States and Britain had encouraged slaves to escape to their side and fight against their captors. So one of the verses written by an American was about the recapture and or the killing of slaves. So the song actually glories in the harming of black people in its original form. Now, we don't sing that verse, but, like, this is part of the stickiness of it, is that's part of our history. And that's and aspects of that history continue in terms of how injustices that happen against African Americans. And so I certainly think he has the right to protest, and whether or not you agree with his exact stance, and I would tend to agree with it more than many would, I still think that if you say you have no right to protest, you're kind of undermining what the flag actually stands for.
Well, and I'll say this, I'm glad it was nonviolent.
Yes.
You know, I mean, it seems like if you're going to demonstrate, if you're going to protest, that seems like a pretty great way to do it. And,
He's been very consistent and very pointed in his explanation as well. So this isn't sort of some, like, reactive, not thought out thing. Like, he's been very consistent and very much, these are the reasons, this is why I'm doing it. I'm not demanding that anybody else do it. I'm not saying nobody should stand up for it. And and so he has not been divisive in his manner about it. And so I think, again, to your point, I think that's to be commended.
Yeah, for sure. Big R, let me lay a scenario in front of you. And I want the audience to go here in all of our minds. Okay. Let's imagine that Big R plays for the San Francisco 49ers. All right. So Pipe, what position for Big R?
Punter.
He's a punter. He wears a single bar face mask.
Yes.
A vintage low hanging single bar face mask. He wears the tights, the jersey, and he's a teammate, a contemporary of Colin Kaepernick. Big R, my question to you is this. If you were Cap's teammate on San Francisco's team, would you kneel with him during the national anthem, or would you stand with your other teammates?
Wow, Big T, that's a good question, man.
Yeah.
I'm gonna give you that one.
I really just wanted people to imagine you in the uniform, man. Which I'm
because
sure
you know I would love
doing.
To wear. You know I've dreamt now for years of wearing one of those single bar helmets.
Baby, I know you'd rock the single bar, man.
I love the single
bar. It's on eBay a long time.
Because those are just fascinating to me, man.
They're
like,
great.
When those guys get pummeled, they just don't need as much protection as the next guy. I love it. You know,
it's almost like they don't want the protection. You know what I mean?
They don't want the protection.
Who was the last guy to wear one of those? Was it Gary Anderson?
Dude, Gary Anderson wore one that. Yeah, Anderson wore one that like. It hung so low it looped like down around his chin. It was like a second chin strap almost.
Yeah, it was like a handle on a picnic basket, and so if he carried it by the face mask, his helmet was the picnic basket.
It's so true. He could throw a couple sandwiches and a bottle of Coke in there and be good to go. But I think the last like real player to wear one was Joe Theismann. So the last non kicker or punter was Theismann.
Wow.
Washington's quarterback in the mid '80s.
Nice.
It's just crazy, man. He was getting
Well, to answer, To answer your cue, I don't think I would. I think it's weird because there's certainly I'm with you guys. I think obviously he has the right to do what he wants. We he has the freedom as being a citizen of this country to protest, and we have those types of freedoms. Those types of freedoms are fought for. I'm with all of that. What I wonder about is just there's an expectation, right? There's an expectation when the national anthem is played to stand, to show respect on some level. And what I've noticed is that everybody's talking about sort of the act more than the thought behind it. And so I think when again, I'm not even making necessarily a judgment on it as much as saying, was that the best way to get his message across? Because I don't hear anybody, like even us, we're not even talking about what he's standing up for or not standing up for, I should say. We're talking about the fact that he simply didn't stand and he has the right not to stand. And nobody remembers the message in any of that. It gets cluttered. It gets obscured because of the expectation there is to stand and be respectful for the men and what, whatever you want to add into that is what we deem respectful, within the act of standing during the anthem. But, I don't know. I think there's better ways to go about it, but I'm not in his position either. So, I don't want to put myself in the place of somebody of whom I don't know what might be going through his head or his, the history that sort of, fed into him wanting to do this. And, so maybe that answer's too safe, but I don't know. I don't know. It seems like he wants the message to get heard, but nobody's talking about the message. They're just talking about what he didn't do,
I feel like that's probably always the case when a minority culture member protests in any way, because the majority culture, we always deflect to the things where we can try to gain what we see as moral high ground. So instead of asking what are people in Ferguson or Baltimore or Atlanta or whatever city protesting about, we say, are they protesting in the right way? I mean, we had the same conversation then when people were protesting, and that's the prerogative. It's the stupid prerogative of the majority culture to deflect away from the issues that are being raised to an issue where we can begin to cast judgment. I think that's my perception. Although there were some people who took the Kaepernick's issue really seriously, because there were a couple local police departments who said, like, we won't work the games anymore, or we're considering not working the games anymore because we feel that we were disrespected and slighted, which is a pretty asinine response. But because they seem to be taking that they seem as petty as anybody else, as opposed to the protect and serve mindset. But isn't that the case where whenever somebody protests, the protest gets turned into it's a grade of how they did it instead of what they're protesting about?
Yeah, it's it's like, you guys, like when you get into an argument with somebody and pretty soon, like, you're not talking about like the object.
I don't like your tone of voice
about.
Ronnie,
yeah, you're talking about the tone of voice and that then your nose is too big and all that stuff starts coming into it. It's like we're not even arguing about the thing anymore. So I mean, in that way, maybe these things wrap around to where this thing sort of gets tilted in a direction maybe he did want it to get tilted into, because then it creates, after all the hype dies down, maybe it creates space for his message to get through. So maybe that's kind of was the mindset behind it. I mean, it's hard to say,
Don't you think too, it comes down to a lot of people just don't want their football and their politics mixing.
Well, no doubt. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah. I mean, we do have a long history of athletes doing political things and going back to Muhammad Ali in the 1968 Olympics.
They're generally really disliked for it in the time.
That's right. They're disliked in the time.
What were the guys? Was it Tommy Smith and the guys who
John
did
Carlos?
The guys who did the Olympics. Fist on the stands. They were blackballed for it. In fact, the white guy who was
Kareem
on the stands
Abdul-Jabbar,
with them,
Jimmy Brown.
Yeah. The white guy who was on the medal stand with those guys, he was from Australia. He was basically blacklisted in Australia for supporting those guys. And he didn't raise his fist because he didn't feel like that was his place. There was a whole really fascinating story a year or two ago about it. But yeah, I mean, no athlete who steps out politically, especially on issues of race, because sports are run by white people, is ever well received. Now, right. In retrospect, we like them. Jackie Robinson is a hero. Muhammad Ali is a hero. But it took 50 years to call him a hero. And maybe Colin Kaepernick will be seen as a footnote in history as doing something significant. But right now he's a pariah because, yeah, we don't want to rock the apple cart of our comfort and our sports.
Dude, 3 weeks from now, will anybody be talking about this or will it have blown over? What do you think, Pipe?
I think that completely depends on the national TV coverage because I think it could expand because when Denver played in the season opener, they had one guy who kneeled down and the camera was on him for half of the national anthem. Mm. And then during other season opening games, there were players who raised their fist or players who took a knee and the camera was on them the entire time. And the announcers are mentioning it. Just sort of in a neutral, in passing way, they're not really saying much about it. But if it continues to expand, it's going to be a thing. And then high school teams are doing it. In fact, there was a high school senior who was suspended by his school for it. Now I think they ended up rescinding the suspension. But like these things, I think it'll continue because I think it's going to continue to expand. I don't like all protests. I don't know what the net impact will be. I hope that it tips something in somebody's mind, but I'm afraid that what's going to happen is that, like Ronnie said, it's just going to deflect to the wrong issues on it.
Sure. Well, boys, speaking of issues, we have one more to discuss briefly before we have to sign off this episode of the Happy Rants. The issue is this, and I'm going to take a backseat to you two gentlemen. Because I feel like you have more expertise on this than I do. Worst worship songs of all time. This sounds like a listener suggestion, was it, Pi?
I think it came up from a listener, yeah. Because we talked about different music styles and bands and whatnot over the years. But I'm pretty sure this one came from a listener a while back.
Nice. So, you guys riff on this, man. Worst worship songs of all time.
Oh, dang.
And why?
Well, I'll go first because there's one that is in my mind that I think is maybe the creepiest worship song ever, and it's In the Secret.
Okay.
Do you remember this one?
Super creepy title. I don't remember this.
In the Secret, in the Quiet Place, in the Stillness, You Are There. And then the chorus is, I want to touch you. Oh, I want to see your face, and so on. And it sounds like the 80s song Somebody's Watching Me. Like that's the lyrical feel. It is the somebody
funny.
Didn't think through that one before it went like quadruple platinum.
Dude, so it was popular. It went huge.
When I was in high school, maybe junior high and high school, like it was one that was sung at like every youth, everything, every camp. I mean, I'm sure it was sung at in church services and stuff all over the place. Our church was less contemporary, but yeah, I mean, it was enormous for maybe 7-8 years, something like that.
Dude, wow. Now let me ask you this. Was there ever a time where you can remember like a truly bad worship song sung at John Piper's church, like crappy theology, like one that snuck through the cracks? You know what I mean?
There were some crappy worship songs, but they were more crappy like just really bad musically.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like
yeah.
some of Graham yeah, yeah. Kendrick's stuff from back in the day. He was, like that. He was like pre-Wow Worship, post-Maranatha Worship, like that era. So people who are super churchy might know what I'm talking about. But yeah, not. I don't recall any that I was like, what is this heinous pile of heresy?
Okay. Big R, what's your take on this? Bad worship songs, all time bad worship songs. What do you got?
Gosh, man, that is such a crazy question because I spent so many years growing up with a real like bent against worship music in general, and it wasn't until I became a worship leader a long time ago that I had to like start, liking it, right?
Yeah.
And I don't remember the one because I came up, in the Calvary Chapel era, so I knew a lot of the Maranatha stuff. And when you listen back to it right now, I mean, theologically, it's not that bad. It mainly comes from scripture. You can like dislike it musically, but theologically, it was okay. I think the stuff that offended me the most was a lot of the 90s, 2000 stuff. And again, it wasn't because the words were so bad, but it was the boppiness. Like, Lord, I lift your name on high and blessed be the name of the Lord.
Any song that comes with hand motions needs to, I mean, that should be on the list.
Yeah, it's just, and again, it's not, again, like Pipe, you would know this. I mean, like blessed be the name of the Lord. It's like, it comes from Job. It's not bad theology at all. It's just more of like the exuberance that like came through with it. And you're looking at each other going like, here's the problem with this song is like my mom loves it. And like, I can't, and I don't, it's hard for me to even sing because like, I've never been this happy a day in my life.
Right.
You know? And yeah, again, that's a personal thing, right? I got my own thing going on with that. You know what I mean?
Are you guys familiar with the site 538?
Never heard of it.
So do you know who Nate Silver is? Have you heard that name?
I've heard the name.
So Nate Silver is a statistical genius and a total nerd who's
he's
done like statistical projections of the last several presidential elections and things like that, and does really well. And now he has a site called 538. I don't know what that stands for. Where it's basically statistical looks at everything. They did a statistical breakdown of contemporary Christian music, and it's like there is no sadness in it anywhere. It's all happiness. Mm. It's all like upbeat. It's kind of what you were saying, Ronnie. Like, I've never been this happy ever in my life. Even when I'm singing about like my depths of despair, I'm like clapping on 2 and 4 and jumping around. And it's just so, I mean, they have no church or Christian affiliations at all. They were just, I don't even know, they must have just had somebody who was interested in it and just noticed it. But like, you can hear it on the radio. You're flipping through the stations. You get to a song, you're like, oh, that's Christian worship music. I can tell because it's obnoxiously happy. And you just, you know, keep going until you find jazz or something.
I mean, I think generally what he's talking about are songs that have become really popular and they've become radio hits and then they transfer over mainly to big churches, but all churches. Because I mean, there is a lot of like really dark, deep, minor chorded, you know, confessional kind of worship songs out there. But you know, you're just not going to hear those on radio. And you know, Hillsong isn't really responsible for writing a lot of those types. And
well, and when you say you know, worship songs, like, I guess I'm thinking like Christian choruses, not like, I mean, what are you? I'm not talking about church music in general, because like, if you go back through hymns and those kinds of things, like those are decidedly different in tone.
Well, no. I'm talking about like there has been a movement of new artists and
like
bands,
singer-songwriter stuff.
Yeah, that are just writing like really, really like that kind of evoke sort of like the hymnody of old, where like they're dark and they're deep. So you listen to Sandra McCracken or you listen to Citizens and Saints, and these are people writing like really like deep, dark, introspective, but completely pulled from the Psalms. You know, they're completely like biblically grounded.
Well, McCracken
and
they're just album called Psalms, didn't she? Like that was one of
and
ones.
you're just probably not going to hear that. You're not going to hear any of that stuff on pop radio. You know what I mean? So it kind of gets largely it gets largely missed by like churches that are looking to do something that's just big and massive and anthemic. You know.
Well, K-Love's motto is positive words, encouraging music, and so. You can't do anything that smacks of real sadness. That's not
well. But then there's that sort of that in between, and you guys would know about this. There's that in between of like when you hear a Getty song, like in Christ Alone, which is like really great. It's not incredibly like it doesn't sound like incredibly dark, but it's incredibly rich. But it definitely pushes against sort of the whole like exuberant, you know, worship pop kind of thing that's going on. But
well,
I don't know.
I think here's a way to tell if this is something that my youth pastor, being an awesome youth pastor, taught me when I was 16 or 17. Here's a way to tell if a worship song is what is good. It's sort of an initial litmus test. If you can replace the word Jesus with the word baby,
I mean, we could do that on this show.
Well,
we say baby a lot is the thing.
Well, yeah, but if you replace the word baby with Jesus, it would get really weird. Possibly
that's true.
A bit blasphemous.
That's true. Well said, Pipe.
But no, there was a song called
Pipe keeping us on track.
That's right. Got to keep heresy at bay. In that way, we're just like Reformed Pubcast.
Absolutely.
There was a song always called, back. To
always. I'm going to get shot in Vegas because of that.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh.
What happens when we do our live broadcast next year at TGC right next to Reformed? What's going to happen?
Maybe we're
going to
have to wear Kevlar, man.
It's going to be like an MMA weigh-in. Up. It's where it's like nose to nose, ready to throw down, and
we're gonna do like it's gonna be like a cast off, like a podcast off, you know, back and forth.
That's right. There was a song around the same time as the one I mentioned earlier called Every Move I Make. And the song went something like, every move I make in you, you make me move Jesus. Mm-hmm. Except you can replace it with Baby, and it just becomes like this boppy love song. So every move I make in you, you make me move Baby. Every mm-hmm. breath I take, I breathe for you. Like, this is the – this is – and then the chorus is la, 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 la. Like, just – that was it. And, like, deep. To me, that was the – what is the opposite of apex? Is it nadir? Is that – Ted, you're the word guy.
Oh, boy, I knew you were going to ask that. Yeah, I think so.
Okay. So we'll call
sure.
that – I think
sure,
that,
that's
so,
it.
I think
sure.
that song was whatever the opposite of apex is for worship music, because it's like – It is utterly meaningless, and the entire chorus isn't even words. It's just a syllable repeated. It's insane. And
you know what's encouraging, though? Like, none of this is going to get better in that field, technically
speaking.
No, that's
speaking. True. It'll only
you know
get
what I mean?
Worse.
Well, only if radio is the basis of which these songs are being written for, though. And that's always going to be the problem if that's the case.
Boys, so. let me throw you one last thing very quickly to wrap on, and this is all I have to add to the worship song thing. But many years ago, I went to a church that's now pastored by a famous person. It's not important who it is, but this church we were like right next to a college campus, right? So we had a little bit of diversity in our body, although not much. We had like one Spanish speaking guy, right? And he was bilingual, you know, he was probably like a PhD in, you know, like crop and soil sciences or whatever. I mean, from across the street. and so we had this one worship song and we would sing it in Spanish, and they would roll it out like once a month. And we would all look up on the screen, and the words would be there in Spanish. We'd sing through the whole thing in Spanish. My question to you is yes or no, stupid or not stupid?
Yes, stupid.
Yeah. Okay, Big R.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to be honest with you, Big T. I'm really surprised that ex famous pastor guy like did it in Spanish like that. I mean, that's the part that it's kind of stuck in my head right now.
Dude, I think maybe he phased it out eventually, man. I feel like this is a long time ago.
Was it just pressure from the Spanish speaking gentleman in the congregation? Is that?
I don't think it was. I don't think that guy. I don't think it meant a dang thing to that guy. No, is what I'm getting at. You know what I mean? Like, anything was patronizing to him.
Yeah, worship pastors do this because there's a person in the congregation who speaks the language. When I was growing up, our church would sing like one song a Sunday in like Swahili, or like just some language that represented a people group that we had a missionary at, but none of them were at our church, and so like right. It's essentially gibberish phrases on
it's
the screen.
Gibberish phrases on screen that mean nothing
to a bunch of
Scandinavians,
and then you have like a bunch of Scandinavians on stage, like playing guitar and piano, and like they're trying to clap and sway to the music. And
it's how we assuage our white guilt, man. That's all it is.
No, it made me feel like
guiltier.
Yeah, I was so offended by white people in those moments.
How we become charismatic.
I was waiting for the Holy Spirit to come down because he would have, like, at least then I could have understood the words.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. No, I know, man. That's strange. I'm glad we talked about that because that's been bothering me for like a decade.
How many Spanish songs are you singing at your new church, Big T?
Zero, man. Zero as of right now. But
okay. Well, you can only hope. I mean, you don't give up hope.
Dude, you know what we do, though? We sing for like an hour. No joke, man. And we stand through the whole thing. Hey, you guys, real quick, what's your take on standing? Like, if you're singing, if your mouth is open and a song is coming out, do you have to be standing in your churches? What does that look like?
Well, the expectation at church is yes. My personal opinion is that people should be able to, aside from like lying on the floor, kind of take whatever position they're comfortable in.
Yeah, but like for us, man, I mean, we go every verse of every song and you're standing for the whole thing. And there's usually like four songs interspersed with we call it middle prayer, in which some like seminary student gets up and like prays through the entire storyline of the Bible. And you're standing for that, too.
That's right? Why you don't give seminary students microphones.
Oh, absolutely not. I agree, Pipe. I agree 110% with that. But all I'm saying is it's a long stand, right? You got to like limber your legs up. Sometimes I put a little
You can't even get any Fitbit steps because you're just standing where you are. Like that's.
I put a little Flexol on my knees before I go to church. You know, we got an ice machine in the back, man. I just wrap some ice packs on my knees after I leave.
Get your Dr. Scholl's. So you're.
I gotta get my Dr. Scholl's. I sit in the hot tub in the training room a little bit for a while after church. You know, just to limber up again.
You guys are the guys that just keep me up at night because I'm thinking that's what you're mad about. Like after everything I just said during the sermon, and that's the thing.
Well,
that
no,
got
here's
you.
The thing. You want to know what I'm mad about after the sermon is the fact like there's the song to close out the service and it's like quiet and reflective, and then one person stands up. And then everybody else is a freaking lemming and just stands up with him. And I can't be like, I'm sitting here thinking about the sermon. Now I got to – So, Ronnie,
Sit. But, be like the NFL guy, man. Sit.
Oh, you know?
But then I'm protesting Jesus. And probably sermon and definitely the pastor. So, like –
And that is
like
your right.
It's like
that
the trifecta of protest, and I would get excommunicated or something.
Dude, I'm not mad about it at my church, but you know who did get a little tweaked about it was my parents. Like they came and they were just like, wow, you know, a lot of singing, a lot of standing, you know, kind of like,
that's funny.
Yeah. Anyway, boys, we've wandered to and fro, as we always do. And, till next time, Rachel LaHeld Evans.
I'm Don Hawkins, and I once heard Chick-fil-A founder Truett Cathy say, you can tell if a person needs encouragement, check to see if they're breathing. I'd like to invite you to my weekly podcast, Encouragement for You, featuring encouraging guests like Dr. Greg and Aaron Smalley, Dan Cathy, the late Dr. Frank Menrith, Josh McDowell, and more. To subscribe to my weekly Encouragement for You podcast, go to lifeaudio.com. That's lifeaudio.com.